Saturday the 21st of January, I'm in Holborn and I'm with Dr. Francis Clark Lowes, who has just come out of the annual general meeting of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Francis Clark Lowes was the founder and chair for quite a while of the Brighton and Hove branch of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, which was founded in 1997. He was also the national chair of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign for two periods between 1998 and 2001. Just come out of the annual general meeting following an appeal that you made against your expulsion from your local branch, I believe.
What happened was that I was expelled from my local branch back in April last year. The correspondence on our local email list was sent by one of our members to the national organisation, and then they proceeded to expel me as well.
You've been expelled from your local branch.
I was expelled from the local branch, and then I was expelled from the national shortly afterwards. Well, it was actually a couple of months afterwards, in fact, yeah.
Okay, and what were the reasons for your expulsion?
I was expelled for saying things which were in conflict with the constitution of Palestine Solidarity Campaign. But what that really means is that I was guilty of anti-Jewish prejudice.
Okay, so the Palestine Solidarity Campaign exists primarily to offer solidarity with the Palestinians.
That is what I would have understood it to be, yes.
Right. So how did this come about?
We, in Brighton and Hove, had a particularly assiduous Jewish member who began to block everything which I said, either publicly or on our email list, sometimes even when I was saying things which I knew him to should be also in agreement with. I just simply became somebody who couldn't say anything right. And as I believe, they'd be foolish enough to believe that I have got something to say, I became rather annoyed by this situation. And also, since I had come to the conclusion that the Holocaust story was not entirely as it is presented to us, and that the way that it is presented to us is the reason for its capital H, I said that I was proud to call myself a Holocaust denier, and that was what led to my expulsion.
Okay.
By the way, not in itself against the constitution of Palestine Solidarity Campaign. What they are claiming, of course, is that that was an expression of anti-Jewish prejudice, which is against the constitution.
So, listening to this, I'm still kind of unclear how we got here. We've got an organization which exists primarily to support Palestinians, to show solidarity with the Palestinians. It's very difficult to support the Palestinians because of a myriad of reasons, but we show solidarity with the people who are showing resilience in the face of incredible oppression. Somehow you've become expelled because you've expressed views about, you're saying, you know, which are regarded as anti-Jewish prejudice.
Yeah. Can I say, I mean, that your confusion is quite justified. It is confusing. Here is an organization which, as you say, exists to support the Palestinians, and spends a great deal of energy scouring everything which is written or said about the subject in case it might be anti-Semitic. What is this waste of energy?
Right.
You know, it the argument is that if you allow people within our organisation, that is within their organisation now, because I'm not part of it, to be, as they say, anti-Semitic, you haven't got a leg to stand on when you oppose what is essentially racist in Israel-Palestine. But my view is that without looking at the whole ideology which supports Israel, which is Jewish, not Zionist, not just Zionist, you will not actually make any impact on it at all.
Okay. So, what were the immediate events leading up to the expulsion? Because I presume this debate had raged on for a while, and I certainly remember that we had a meeting in your house in 2008.
I think it was
2008, when Gilad Atzmon, an Israeli, had been booked to speak at the Breitholtz Center.
That's right. Yeah.
And Tony Greenstein, who I am going to presume is the activist that you've had the run-ins with, managed to spook the centre in a way that you felt you needed to withdraw the meeting from there, and we met in your home.
Yeah.
I recorded that meeting, and it was, I think that was the second or third time I'd met Gilad, and I came away from that, and that recording exists.
Yeah.
And I have not yet been able to identify any racism in there.
Right.
So I can understand that the Palestine Solidarity Campaign is an anti-racist campaign, and that seems like a reasonable thing, but we get into very difficult water, it seems to me, when we get to the subject of anti-Semitism. Is it racism? You know, and I've recently been in the discussion with Tony, who's called me an anti-Semite, asking him to display my racism, and he has basically said to me that if I admit that my defense of Gilad Atzmon in 2007 was a mistake, he will retract the accusation. So it appears that my racism is defending the work of Gilad Atzmon.
Which I also would defend.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I understand racism to be prejudice against a group, but that's just not just prejudice. It is a systemic prejudice by a group which has some power to inflict discomfort on that group. And I'm not really understanding how a campaign that exists to support Palestinians is having the same arguments that pro-Palestinian supporters are continually dragged into by Zionists.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is any of us who support Palestine and who have engaged in any kind of internet discussion have immediately been branded as anti-Semites and possibly Holocaust deniers by Zionists. But this is coming now from a group who exists specifically to support Palestinians.
It is very curious, isn't it?
And
it involves hair-splitting distinctions, which it is not, I think, reasonable to ask a campaigning organisation to involve itself in. If there are people who don't like Jews, for heaven's sake, if they support the Palestinians, we should have them on board. After all, disliking Jews is not a crime. It's often presented as if it were. What, as you say, would I think be wrong would be some kind of campaign of discrimination against Jews which had no basis. I'm not entirely sure that there wouldn't be some justification for saying that the involvement of Jewish organisations as opposed to Jewish individuals in campaigning for Palestine ought to be looked at with some suspicion. Okay. Because I think that's where this problem arises. It arises because of the involvement of largely Jews, some also fellow travellers, as it were, of the kind of Jewish ideology which is such a problem. That's, you know, that kind of discrimination, I think, might have some justification. I think it would be reasonable for campaigning organisations for Palestine to say we don't accept Jewish organisations in our campaign.
Okay. I'm going to ask you...
Perhaps I should just follow that, sorry. Unless, of course, they can prove in some way their credentials.
Okay.
Like Natural Aikatai, for example, I don't think I would oppose them being...
Right. So that leads me on to what I was trying to clarify. When you talk about Jews,
yeah.
What do you mean?
yes, the $100,000 question, or whatever it is, $64,000. I mean by a Jew, firstly, of course, somebody who practices the Jewish religion. That's a clear definition. But then you get on to the question of how to define secular Jews. I mean, what is a secular Jew? Well, it seems to me that, leaving aside chicken soup and you know, one or two other sort of cultural survivals, the main thing has become Zionism. Zionism has become a form of Jewish, let's put it another way, it's become a crucial part of Jewish identity. So that if you attack Zionism, you are effectively attacking Jews. That's the problem.
Okay. So, do you have a problem with Jews?
I have many Jewish friends, as they say, and I have no problem with them individually. I have a problem with them if we ever get onto the subject, however, of Israel-Palestine. Because I notice that they trot out all the same sorts of things which Palestine Solidarity Campaign exists to try to overthrow. And I don't altogether blame them. I can understand why that happens. It happens because they've been brought up in an atmosphere in which there is one kind of truth. And sometimes they question a bit here and they say it would be better if it weren't a Likud could government, it would be better if it was a Labour government, and, you know, this kind of thing. But they don't face the reality that Israel is an extraordinarily oppressive and, if you want to call it, use that word, racist state. I'm trying to avoid the use of the word racist, because I think there's so many questions around that word as well.
Right. Okay, so for instance, I was with the International Solidarity Movement,
yeah.
And I spent some months in Nablus. And about a third of the people who were there with me as international volunteers were people who self-identified as Jewish. And it seemed to me that the vast majority of them really didn't in any way fit into what you've just described. That they did not think that it was about whether it was a Likud government or some other government, that they understood that for Palestinians a great injustice had been done,
yes.
And that, you know, they were there to show solidarity in exactly the same way as I was.
Right. I'm glad to hear that, and as long as that is the case, I have no problem with that. I've heard other examples where that hasn't been the case, where, for example, Palestinians have been lectured to on making a distinction between Jews and Zionists. I don't think we're in any position to lecture Palestinians on such matters.
I absolutely agree with you on that.
I also think that, what happened to my friend Heather Stroud, she was in a group which was meant to go to Gaza. And she was put under, and then they cancelled the trip to Gaza. the Jewish members of that group, great pressure on her to come round to a particular way of viewing the conflict, which I think is quite wrong. So, you know, of course I know, I mean, Paul, after all, is Jewish, I don't have a problem at all with him, because I know that he sees what the depth of the problem is, and the same with Gilad.
Okay, well, Gilad talks, has three categories.
Yes.
So he talks about people who are religious Jews, and he says for people who are religious Jews, he has no problem with them. And he talks about second category Jews, which are people who are born Jewish, but who don't, who operate as humans along with the rest of us, I think would be the term he describes it. And then he describes the third category, which are people who identify primarily as Jewish. And is that who you're talking about when you use the term Jews?
What, the third category?
Yeah.
I think I'm talking about all three categories.
Right.
And I think that the second category can be a bit... one can be deluded into thinking that it is not a problem.
Right.
Because I think the second category actually will jump on you for what is considered to be anti-Semitism in all sorts of circumstances where maybe lots of non-Jews would also do it. But it has a particular edge if Jews do it. If somebody is known to be Jewish and says what you're saying is anti-Semitic, that's going to scare most people, because careers can be lost. You know, it can be an extremely damaging accusation. So, my friends who are Jewish in Brighton, I mean, I could probably rattle off about 15 straight off. They'd be absolutely fine when I interact with them in every normal, you know, part of life. If I go to a concert with somebody, or if I'm, you know, involved in some kind of transaction, or, you know, all those things, no problem at all. But if it comes to Israel-Palestine, immediately I'm regarded as suspect, a bit dangerous, you know, a bit off the wall, and so on. We just keep off that subject. And I keep off the subject because I don't want to lose them as friends.
And this is an ideological matter now.
Yes.
I mean, no one's born with an attachment to Israel in Brighton.
No, it's there in the history. In some senses, it's rather like supporting a football team. You know, you're born Jewish, so you tend to support Israel, you know, because for most people it isn't a kind of, there isn't an awareness of what Israel actually means. They've been taught that it's a democratic state, that the only rule it ever wanted was peace with the Palestinians, you know. I mean, this is so contradictory when you consider that 750,000 were thrown out in 1948 and were never allowed to return. Those kinds of things, and another 250,000 probably in 1967. But your average Jew doesn't know that. They're category two, but by their beliefs, which are not the centre of their identity. No, I agree, that's not the centre of their identity, but they still support category three in some sense. They subscribe to the idea of Jewish suffering, for example. I mean, one of the... who's the woman who wrote That is a Feminist Issue?
Dworkin.
Dworkin. No, it wasn't. Anyway, doesn't matter. But I asked her, what did it mean to her to be Jewish? And she said, a sense of suffering, of collective suffering. And you can see where that comes from and so on. But of course it also colours the way that Jews behave collectively.
Okay, but...
Susie Orbach.
Susie Orbach, yes, okay.
I don't blame her. I'm not blaming her for feeling that way.
It's
a reality. It plays a part in the reality that we're facing.
Are there any Jews who have escaped from this?
Sitting next to one. No, well, perhaps not. Okay. No, I agree with him. You haven't. No. But at least to be aware of it and fully aware of it is, I think, an important aspect.
Okay.
None of us could get out of our clothes completely, but we can be aware of the fact that we wear them.
Right. So we're talking. You are essentially talking about an identity which is developed from growing up Jewish, from being born
yes.
Jewish and growing up Jewish.
Yes.
And I mean, I do believe that there are Jews who've escaped from that and who don't in any way feel ownership of Israel, who don't in any way feel that there's any justification in what has happened to the Palestinians, and who, you know, so I mean, I find it quite difficult to hear you talk about Jews in such a general way, and I think we're conditioned to be very scared of doing that anyway.
Yeah, no, exactly, we are conditioned in that way. But the thing is that the conditioning that we undergo comes from a culture, and cultures are not set in stone, they can be changed. I think that you can be completely against Zionism and still help Zionist cause by the way in which you express your sensitivity about any kind of discussion of Jewishness.
And that includes non-Jews as well, then.
It does include non-Jews, but it certainly includes Category 2 Jews.
Okay.
And because that makes it difficult to discuss the things which I believe we need to discuss.
Okay. Let's explore Mr. Greenstein a bit, because he does seem somehow to crop up all over the place in the matter of anti-Zionism. Because I think when the claim comes from Zionists, we can reject it to some extent, because we reject what Zionism is doing. We have chosen to show solidarity with the Palestinians who we believe an injustice has been done to. So anyone who adheres to the ideology that oppresses Palestinians, we can take a step back and say, well, I don't identify with that. But we've got someone here who is quite a key figure. He describes himself as a founder of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign.
Yeah, I found a member
of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign. He's also a member of a number of organizations such as Jews Against Zionism, the Jewish Socialist Group. Is he not a member of... No, he's not. Okay. Right, well, he's had contact with them, but I can cut this out anyway. So Jews Against Zionism, JFJFP... I believe he's a member of, and certainly JBIG, he's been involved with, Jews for Boycotting Israeli Goods. Why is he bringing these accusations of anti-Semitism?
I want really to answer first the what you said about us as a campaigning sort of fraternity, if you like, or sorority, in relation to Zionism. I don't think that it is actually quite so simple to oppose Zionism. Because if the Jewish ideological position, which is fundamentally that Gentiles always will hate Jews sooner or later, and are only waiting for the opportunity to kill them, then a Jewish state makes absolute sense. What you need to do if you want to argue against that, is to argue that the idea behind it is nonsense. And that is a Jewish idea. It isn't a it isn't just a Zionist idea.
Right.
I mean, I think it is basically what Susi Orbach was saying to me when she said a communal sense of persecution. I think she said a communal sense of suffering. But it implies also, of course, injustice towards Jews and hatred of Jews and so on and so forth.
And there has historically been anti-Semitism.
Yes, there has. But that whole history needs to be looked at rather carefully. There has been a kind of a wave movement in which Jews have done well, then they've aroused anti-Semitism through whatever, and then there's been a period where they do badly, and then, you know, they do well again and so on. That's gone on right through history. And I think there must be reasons for it. I don't think you can say it's just uncaused.
Okay.
It may not be justified.
Right.
But to say that it may not be justified is not to say that there aren't reasons for it.
Okay. I mean, we're touching on extremely difficult subject matter here. In my discussions about the particular piece that Tony Greenstein objected to on Indie Media, he accused Gilad of saying exactly that the Jews were responsible for their own Judaicide.
Yes.
And for him this was racism. Now, working alongside him in trying to get me to condemn Atzmon was an Indie Media Zionist, which is quite an interesting contradiction in terms, as far as I can see, called Gehrig from the States, who did say that the Palestinians were responsible for their suffering because of their suicide bombing campaign. So he seemed to be able to accept that a group could bring suffering upon itself by its behaviour.
Yes, that's interesting, isn't it? Yes.
However, for him it was obviously racist to suggest that the same was true for Jews.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a contradiction there. You're quite right.
What I think I'm having difficulty with thinking around is what would the behaviour be of the Jews that might in any way have contributed to this Judaicide of Hitler?
I would say in quite simple terms, arrogance and association with power, both of those together. Jews in the east of Europe, in Poland and so on, I presume also to some extent in Germany as well, were often involved in intermediary positions between the upper classes of those societies and the people. And in those now, perfectly understandable that Jews should have done that. That was their survival strategy. Their survival strategy, according to Gilad, goes right back to the Babylonian exile. They always have gone for power. They switched their allegiance from the Soviet Union to the Americans after the Second World War. It's a well-trodden path that Jews have followed. But of course it has made them hated at times because they've become associated with the very people who are oppressing the ordinary people of Poland, Russia, wherever you talk about Ukraine. I haven't studied this in great depth, but I believe it to be the case. And I think there's a guy, a French guy, Lazare, who has written on this subject, the history and causes of anti-Semitism. Paul Lazare, is he, or I can't remember, anyway, whatever. And he goes into it in great depth. I can't say that I've read the whole of the book, but I've read enough of it to respect him quite a lot. He was Jewish.
Okay. So, we're sitting here now, you as a former chair of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, national chair, have now been expelled from the group because of expressing your thoughts about Jewish power. Where does this leave the Palestinians? Where do the Palestinians come into this? We agreed at the beginning this was the primary focus of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, was solidarity with Palestinians.
Well, I'm going to say something rather shocking, I suppose. We have had a campaigning organisation since 1982 called Palestine Solidarity Campaign. We've had other people campaigning for the Palestinians. We've had the Palestinians themselves trying to rely on the United Nations to help them and so on. And where has any of it got them? All that has happened is that they have lost more and more land, and they are in a worse and a worse position. So in some ways the question is, what needs to be done in addition to what we are doing now in order to change that situation? And it seems to me, and by the way, it comes from my whole involvement with the Centre for German Jewish Studies at the University of Sussex. I've been aware all along that this problem exists. It was so totally obvious in that centre at Sussex that the whole ethos of Jewish chauvinism, of memorialisation of the Holocaust, and so on and so forth, was totally inimical to the interests of the Palestinians. And when I tried to bring up the issue of Palestinians, I was shunned by people. Hannah Brown, God bless her, came down and spoke to the group at one stage, and there was a riot. I mean, I don't agree with everything that Hannah believed in, but nevertheless, it was an interesting demonstration of the degree to which any organisation which was interested in Jewish culture and not anything to do with politics became involved in the Zionist question, wasn't able to separate itself from Zionism.
Okay. But, I mean, primarily you've got involved in this because of the need to show solidarity with Palestinians.
Yes, I did. I lived in the Middle East for 10 years. And I met lots of Palestinians. I was in Saudi Arabia for most of that time, and many Palestinians worked with me. There was one particular Palestinian who I remember with affection, a man called Saeed Hamdan. He was a Jordanian national, but nevertheless Palestinian background. And when I went to Saudi Arabia in 1979, I was full of the usual kind of rubbish which ordinary middle-class people in Britain have about the Israel-Palestine conflict. You know, the need for balance, the need to look at both sides, of course, and also the need to believe at that stage that British foreign policy had been at least benevolent. It might have been at times foolish, but never malevolent. And Saeed Hamdan just laid into me. Why do you believe that? Why do you believe this? Why do you believe the other thing? That's rubbish. Read this, read that. I don't think I did read the things, but that sowed the seeds of doubt in my mind, which led me to where I am now. And it's seeds of doubt that I want to sow now among people about the conventional route to Palestine Solidarity. It isn't enough.
So, what do you think we need to do? How does this need to move forward as a movement? I mean, I presume that the aim is to build a mass movement. That if we're going to have any kind of influence on policy, we need as much support as possible for the Palestinians. And how do we achieve that?
I I've always been a bit suspicious about whether actually mass movements work.
It was the name of the PSC
yes,
for a long time.
Yes, of course. Well, it actually, I don't remember it being spoken about so much when I was chair, but maybe. But of course, we were so down on our uppers at the time that, I mean, if we had a reasonable number of members, that was all we were hoping to achieve at that stage. I think a much more targeted approach is what is needed, and we need to think. The Zionists did think. They achieved what they did through very careful planning, very careful targeting of the sources of power at that time. You know, Theodor Herzl visited the two Kaisers. He visited the French president, I think, and he came to Britain and he met the foreign secretary here. He met the Tsar's representatives. He went to Istanbul and met the Sultan's representatives. You know, he didn't leave a stone unturned when it came to dealing with power. We don't do that.
Right.
We don't do that. We fiddle around trying to get a few backbenchers on our side.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
Well, that's all that's available. I mean, Gillard is saying 80% of Conservative MPs are friends of Israel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is quite a scary thought, because Israel is not...
And Labour is not much different.
Yeah, Israel is not the easiest entity to be friends with. Yeah. It's quite... a vicious and nasty state by anyone's standards, I think.
But what does that say about the interests of politicians? You know, what is going on behind the scenes there? And, you know, now accused of conspiracy theory, but, you know, something must be going on to make them sign up to being friends of Israel. And particularly that some of those people are people who previously used to be all for the Palestinians. They just turn like that when they get to higher positions.
Closer
to power. Yeah.
In fact, I seem to remember reading an Ali Abinima article called How Barack Obama Learned to Love Israel.
Yes.
And he was at one time a Palestinian supporter.
Yeah.
I've always believed it was possible to go from supporting Israel to supporting Palestine, but ethically very difficult to do it the other way around. So where are we with Palestine solidarity campaigning in this country now?
Well, of course, I'm out of it. So I have to think in terms of where I go from here, and there are various routes. You know, I'm at a stage in my life where I'm 67. I don't want to only do this.
Mm-hmm.
I have other things I want to do with my life. But as far as I'm concerned, I will do what I can to raise the kinds of issues which I spoke about today in the appeal. Not because I have the answers, but because without discussing them, I don't think we can go forward. And there is, I suppose, here something that I didn't say because I only had 5 minutes. I do actually want to say that for Jews themselves, getting off this wheel of this cycle of ups and downs and ups and downs between anti-Semitism and arrogance and association with power, somehow or other, for them also, that needs to come to an end or to be moderated, at least. Because without it being moderated, Jews will always be hated. I mean, look at the degree of power, obvious power, in a sense, in Jewish hands today. If you look at Mirz Haibarov's book, I mean, it is staggering.
Right.
They call it the pro-Israel lobby. But, of course, it's Jewish. I mean, you know, and they know that perfectly well. They just say it's pro-Israel because they'll get into big trouble if they say it's Jewish. Although, by the way, 40 years ago, nobody had any problem with talking about the Jewish lobby.
Okay, so we've got to a position now where the main campaigning body in this country for Palestinian solidarity is in fact closing down this discussion.
Yes.
It is expelling people who dare to start thinking about what may be the wider causes.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Yes, you did ask the question. I didn't really answer it. You said, why is Tony Greenstein raising this whole issue? I think there are various answers to that. I'm not Tony Greenstein's psychoanalyst. But I can imagine that for many people in Category 3, campaigning for the protection of Jewishness gives them a buzz.
It isn't just tiny, there's something bigger going on.
Yes, of course, yeah.
But it must be a mistake, surely, that the focus is diverted from the Palestinians who suffer daily.
Yes.
And impossibly, you know, I have sleepless nights remembering that suffering.
Yeah.
And that somehow we are now in a witch hunt, which is a perpetuation of the witch hunt that happens to anyone who dares to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
Yes. I understand the need for identity. I need it myself. At times when I felt kind of disconnected, I felt uncomfortable, insecure, and all the rest of it. Yes, I understand the need that people feel for identity. I think it is incumbent on those who can see when the use of an identity is to oppress other people, is pointed out to them. I think it's often very difficult for the people themselves to see it. It's outsiders who can see it. If, however, an ideology has been created in which even discussing that, even moderate criticism, is regarded as anti-Semitism, then, you know, what can you do? It is, as I say, it's an unsinkable kind of ideology because it has an answer for everything. It's a bit like Marxism, a bit like Freudianism too. And it's not an accident that those two people were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
In my view.
Okay, we're out of time. I think there's a lot of food for thought in what we've talked about, and I'll certainly go away and do some thinking about it. Thank you very much, Francis.
Thank you.